jak jsem říkal na začátku, tak pokračujeme ve čtení listu Filipským. Budeme číst z první kapitoly od verše 12. až do konce. Minule jsme četli tu první část, kdy jsme mluvili hlavně o tom právě povzbuzení k růstu, k životu víry, kdy se apoštol Pavel modlil za to, aby se prohlubovala právě naše láska, naše poznání Boha a abychom byli plní ovoce spravedlnosti. A nyní pokračuje ve svém dopise od verše 12. Rád bych, bratří, abyste věděli, že to, co mě potkalo, je spíše k prospěchu evangelia. Takže po celém soudu i všude jinde je známo, že jsem vězněn pro Krista. A mnohé bratry právě mé okovy povzbudili, aby se spolehli na Pána, s větší smělostí mluvili beze strachu slovo Boží. Někteří sice káží Krista také ze závisti a z řevnivosti, jiní však s dobrým úmyslem. Jedni z lásky, protože vědí, že jsem tu k obhajobě evangelia, druzí z touhy po uplatnění, ne z čistých pohnutek, a domnívají se, že mi v mém věznění způsobí bolest. Ale co na tom? Jen když se jakýmkoliv způsobem, ať s postranními úmysly, ať upřímně, zvěstuje Kristus. Z toho se raduji a budu radovat. Neboť vím, že se mi vše obrátí k dobrému vaší modlitbou a přispěním Ducha Ježíše Krista. Toužebně očekávám a doufám, že v ničem nebudu zahanben, ale veřejně a směle, jako vždy, i nyní na mě bude oslaven Kristus. Ať životem, ať smrtí. Život to je pro mě Kristus a smrt je pro mě zisk. Mám-li žít v tomto těle, získám tím možnost další práce. Nevím tedy, co bych vyvolil, táhne mě to na obě strany. Toužím odejít a být s Kristem, což je jistě mnohem lepší. Ale zůstat v tomto těle je zase potřebnější pro vás. Proto pevně spoléhám, že zůstanu a budu se všemi vámi k vašemu prospěchu a k radosti vaší víry, abyste se mohli mnou ještě více chlubit v Kristu Ježíši, když k vám opět přijdu. Jenom vejte život hodný Kristova evangelia, abych viděl, až přijdu, nebo nepřijdu-li, abych slyšel, že zakotvením v jednom duchu vedete jednou myslí zápas ve víře v evangelium. A v ničem se nestrachujete protivníků. Jim je to předvěst k zahynutí, vám však k spasení, a to od Boha. Neboť vám je z milosti dáno netolika v Krista věřit, ale pro něho i trpět. Vedete tý zápas, jaký jste u mě viděli a o jakém nyní slyšíte.
This passage from Philippians chapter 1 is a little bit like a diamond. A diamond has many faces showing. There are many things that we could learn from Philippians chapter 1. We only have time to learn one of the many faces. So we're going to look at the face in Philippians 1 that actually is a face all the way through the book. And the big theme of the book is joy and how to have it and how to keep it. Maybe you've already learned that life is not fair. And sometimes it's much worse than not fair. There is evil in this world that is far worse than just not being fair. And I imagine that most of us have thought at times, I don't deserve what's happening to me. And we feel like victims and not victors in life. And if you've ever felt this way, the book of Philippians is a gift to you. 16 times in this little short book, we are encouraged to have joy in the Lord always. Philippians chapter 1 explains that we can have joy in the Lord when others are feeling like victims. We can have joy when it seems like the sun is not shining on our lives. In the United States, when a person is a little sad or even a little sick, we sometimes hear, I'm feeling under the weather. When one has way too much work to do, she'll say, I feel like I'm snowed under. And when one has way too many problems, the person will say, I'm trying to survive the storm. So I imagine in Czech culture, there must be some phrases that relate to the weather. And what we need is an all-weather source of joy, and Paul says we can have it. I don't want to sound unrealistic. Jesus had this all-weather joy, but he still wept at the tomb of Lazarus. And the Bible tells us that Jesus was depressed the night that Judas Iscariot betrayed him. But Jesus didn't remain this way. The joy quickly came back to his life. The all-weather joy of Jesus and Paul didn't mean that they laughed when it was time to weep, but it means they lived with a perspective and confidence that enabled them to continue to be joyous or for joy to come back soon. You know your circumstances. And what we've just read in Philippians 1 is Paul telling us his circumstances. And what you may have noticed is that it was Paul's faith and his values that sustained his all-weather joy. You see, if a person has a value to always look young, that person is going to have some joyless days ahead. But if you value the inner beauty that Christ can bring into your life, you can always have joy. Some of the most beautiful people we know are in their 70s, 80s, and even 90s. If you're a football coach of young students, and if your goal is to always win, your joy will be up and down like a yo-yo. But if you value training character and developing skills, you can have joy every week, whether you win or not. So it's not your circumstances, but your values that will determine whether you have joy or not. Paul's current storm is that he's in prison. But Paul says being in prison has also sort of promoted the progress of the gospel. Will he be depressed over being in chains? Or will he be joyous because the gospel is advancing? For Paul, whether he complains, I'm in prison, or whether he rejoices, is all determined by what's really important to him. And Paul was joyous in prison because he knew of people that were continuing to hear about Christ and believe in him. At the time he wrote this, he was a prisoner in Rome, chained, literally chained to a Roman guard and facing the possibility of execution. And this bad storm isn't the only bad weather he's had. For the past 3 or 4 years of his life, it seems like he's been in a constant storm. Paul experienced violence and near death at the hands of mobs. He had been in prison before. People threatened his life. He was held up for public ridicule. He was in a storm at sea, shipwreck, and all kinds of, tragedies like that. And he had friends who turned away from him. So now just pause for a moment and say, what storms am I going through? And have these storms taken away from me all the joy and goodness of life? In Paul's circumstances, he doesn't complain, why is all of this happening to me? Didn't Jesus come to make my life pleasant and convenient? Paul doesn't indulge in that kind of thinking. The question he asks is the gospel making progress? Are my difficulties in any way advancing the cause of Christ? And if I can find an answer for yes in that, then I will rejoice. And he had learned that his imprisonment had led more and more people to talk about Jesus, to discuss him, and some to believe. There were several ways in which the gospel made progress because of Paul's difficulties. He says, my imprisonment has become well known through the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else. The Praetorian Guard were the officers in special service to Caesar. Caesar examined and chose these men to be his special security force and even in the kind of the inner circle of the palace. Because of Paul's status as a Roman citizen and because he had appealed his case to Caesar, Caesar had to give him special care. Now, I know that Paul did not like to be chained because he told King Agrippa one time, I wish you were like me, excepting for my chains. Paul could have complained morning, noon, and evening because he was physically chained to somebody else. Instead, he thought, this person can't avoid me. He has to listen to me. And these guards knew he wasn't a criminal, and they knew that he wasn't a political prisoner. He was charged with some possible crime called being a Christian. And they thought, wow, this is kind of new and interesting. And they heard him tell about remarkable events in Jerusalem. And they heard him interview friends, and they kind of watched over his shoulder as he wrote these letters. And at the end of this book, in chapter 4, verse 21, Paul says this, all the saints who greet you, especially those of Caesar's household. Those were the Praetorian guards who were chained to him. So, Paul didn't like chains, but he knew God was using these difficulties. My best friend in Kenosha, Wisconsin, is a man named Edward St. Peter. His surname really is St. Peter. He's the only one in the world I know with a surname of St. Peter. 18 months ago, Ed and Paula, that's his wife, their house burned completely. Ed St. Peter is my age. And a year and a half ago, his house burned all the way down. In America, many homes are like 90% wood. How would you feel if you saw your house go up in flames with all your furniture, 60 years of pictures, you know, every childhood memory, and it's all gone. In weather terms, I think this would be a firestorm. Ed and I exchanged emails a year and a half ago, and we've been writing about it again in the last few weeks. And he's starting a book about this. He said the fire happened on a Monday evening. We finally left about midnight. Our son, Timothy, invited us to come spend the night with him. And we talked for a while and we tried to sleep. I prayed for a while, but I could not sleep. So I drove back to our house at 2 a.m. I opened up a lawn chair and sat down in the yard. I cried and I prayed and I asked God, what's your purpose in this? I knew the fire was not out of his control and that he could use it for his glory, but I couldn't imagine how. I sat there for hours. And at one time I looked up over the house and there were still some, we could say, charred beams that were, you know, they hadn't all fallen in. And so he's looking up and he sees these charred beams in the open sky. And the sky cleared and through these beams, he could see the stars shining. And I started to hear God talking to me. Ed, I have everything under control. I'm sovereign in your life. You need to trust me. I know what's best and how I will use this to bring glory to me. Ed was one of the best known men in that city. Kenosha has about 100,000 people, so it's about the size of Pardubice or Raditz-Kralova or Liberec. And 5 years ago when I moved here, Ed was receiving a lot of pressure to run for mayor of the city. Now when people think of Ed St. Peter, they don't think of a politician. They think of a Christian man who lost everything and continued to lead worship and music and church and glorify God. The fire advanced the gospel in Kenosha. And Ed knows that. And he actually rejoices in the loss of everything he ever had. So the Apostle Paul felt that way. I've lost all my freedom. I've lost everything. But if the gospel's advancing, I'm really happy. Another thing that made Paul rejoice was that some other people were becoming very bold. There were some younger people probably in the church who had been sort of quiet and not leaders. And now that Paul was in prison, they said, somebody's got to lead. I guess I will stand up. And smart leaders, not all leaders, but smart leaders rejoice when they see people they've mentored become stronger. And there were some who were becoming bold who did not even have good motives. There were some people that didn't like Paul, and it's hard to imagine this, but it says they had evil motives and they wanted to make his life more difficult. And these were really Christians. What you need to know is that there were Christians in Rome a long time before Paul ever got there. The church in Rome began on the day of Pentecost. And by church, I don't mean a building or an organization, but I mean God's life and believing people. On the day of Pentecost, the apostles were given the gift of thinking and speaking and answering questions in a foreign language they didn't know. And we have a long list in Acts 2 of these languages and cultures. And it mentions Egypt and Libya and Cyrene and visitors from Rome. And then when it says Rome, it says both Jews and converts to Jews and people from Crete and from Arabia. One or more Christian leaders were suddenly able to think and reason and speak and answer questions in Latin. They didn't know Latin. All of a sudden, they're able to talk and have conversations and share the story of Christ in Latin. And because of this gift of perfect communication, many in Rome became believers that day. And then they returned to Rome from this Jewish religious holiday. So when Paul finally got to Rome, the church was already 20 or 25 years old. And they had established leaders and teachers. And then Paul was brought to Rome in chains, and the spotlight was on him. And the earlier leaders felt like they were forgotten. And the attention was on Paul, but the pressure was on everybody. And because of the Apostle Paul, the tension between the pantheon of Roman demon gods and the gospel of Christ, that tension became very strong. And some of them reasoned, we were doing great until Paul came. And now we're in the middle of a spiritual religious war. And we may all lose our houses, businesses, and even our lives. So some who became bolder for Christ were actually critics and not fans of Paul. But Paul did not value his name and his reputation above the gospel. He says, what does it matter? The important thing is that every way, whether from good motives or bad, the gospel is preached. And then he adds as an exclamation point, and I rejoice. So Paul valued the progress of the gospel above his freedom, above his reputation, above anything else. And I do believe that when Nero figured out that the Christians in Rome were divided over Paul, that it made it easier for him to give the death sentence. And then Paul rejoiced in something else. He said, I will continue to rejoice because you're praying for me. And because you pray for me, the Spirit of Christ helps me. And this will lead to my deliverance. Please learn to value praying friends. Everything God does here begins with one or more people praying. I like it when people say, will you pray for me? It's not a burden. It's not a problem. It's what we do as Christians. We should all value the prayers of others, and we should all be bold in saying, will you pray for me? And then Paul says that the gospel is advancing in another way. The gospel was still making progress in Paul's own life. He said, my earnest expectation and hope is that Christ will be exalted in me, whether I live or die. Paul half expects to live and half expects to die. And he's right both times. After this imprisonment, he was let free for 2 to 5 years. And then he was put back in prison again. And then after the second time, he is killed. But in all of this, Paul knows, I'm not stagnant. I'm still making progress. I'm still growing. And he says, and I know that's happening in you too. I know that I shall continue with you all for your progress and joy in Christ. And Paul felt this tension. He said, boy, I don't want my life to end up kind of shameful. I want to continue to exalt Christ till my last breath. In Philippians 1:6, he says, I know God continues what he begins in people. But he says, I'm a little concerned about myself, and I want to make sure I make progress. It mattered very much to Paul that his life become more and more like the Lord's, and that he be less distracted by the things of the world. And the last thing I want to say is that Paul had joy because of his idea that life and death really weren't that much different. In Hebrews chapter 2, the writer talks about the control the devil has over many people because of their fear of death. Stalin so feared death that he kept killing his family and all of his friends. And he used this fear of death to cause others to betray family, friends, and to deny God. Paul said death is like sort of folding down your tent and putting it up someplace else. He said, Christ can be exalted in my death. That'd be good. I'd like that. Christ could be exalted by my continued to live. But that'd be good. I'd like that. What I really want is Christ to be lifted up. Maybe you've known people who were so much in love that all they thought or talked about was the other person. It's kind of fun to be around such people. And that's all Paul thought about was Jesus. For me to live is Christ. My life is filled with Jesus. I talk about Christ because I think about Christ. And regarding Paul's future, there's one other thing we can know. Paul knew that the decision of his life or death would not be made by Caesar. The decision about his life would be made by his Father who loved him. And the question would be, do I still need Paul on this earth, or is it time for me to bring him home? What things were out of Paul's control? His chains, his friends, his enemies, his friends who acted like enemies, Caesar, today and tomorrow. Paul couldn't control any of these. So he's not going to let anything out of his control take away his joy. What is in Paul's control? To speak to the guards, to write to friends and to pray for many, to bless and thank those who are bold in the faith, to encourage others, to continue to grow in his love for Jesus. Yeah, he said, it's in my control whether the gospel makes continued progress in me. So he paid just a little attention to what he couldn't control, but he gave full attention to what he could control. And what was in God's control? Caesar, the verdict. Who would be assigned to Paul this day? God made that assignment. God controlled it all, even life and death. Paul smiled and said that he loves me, and I'm happy. I was only a couple years older than Peter when I had this experience. I stood in a hospital room beside a middle-aged lady who was dying of cancer. She was 15 years younger than I am now. And I didn't know how much freedom I had to talk to her about cancer and dying. So I asked her a question. I said, what do you think about when you're lying in this hospital bed? And she said, I'm thinking about dying, then I can talk about it. What she said was, I think about when I might go home. I thought, what does she mean? Is she in denial? So I said, Joyce, what do you mean you think about when you'll be able to go home? And with great peace and something almost like a glow, she said, I think about when I'll be going home to my Heavenly Father. And like Paul, she was not only ready for it, she was sort of smiling and anticipating it. And even with cancer, she had an all-weather joy. What is your life like? I wish for the gospel that began your Christian life to make progress this fall. And I wish for you the values that lead to an all-weather peace and joy. And I suggest you make a short list of things that are stealing the joy from your life. And then just choose two or three. And then ask, in this situation, what is it that I value so much that it's destroying my peace and my joy? And then ask, Lord, what is it you want me to value more so that even in this storm, your joy can come back to me? And if you still sort of get stuck, just read the book of Philippians. Every chapter has more information on how to have all-weather joy. God bless you all.